last week here, we had lessons and carols. Some of you, a few of you were here for this. The weather was not good last week. There was not a lot of people here. That's all right. And what we did was we went through Matthew's gospel from the birth of Jesus through, we had today's story again as well, and then the next part that happens after that, what Herod does when he realizes what happened in today's story. So some of us have heard these stories before. Now, today is not Epiphany, but as Micah said in the children's sermon, but we did decide to do the Epiphany lessons today. And I'm glad that we did, because it made it a little easier for me to rewrite my sermon when the news changed. You know how, at least the news wasn't yesterday, it was a couple of days ago. But I read this story in a new light once I heard about this new war with Iran thing. That was one of those. That's not even the biggest news of the week to me. We'll get to that later. But I did think I needed to change it around a little bit, particularly because, you know, these so-called wise men from the East, traditionally, one of the locations they're expected to have been from was Persia. Y'all know where Persia is now, right? It's Iran. It's the place that is in the news. The going theory on these wise men is that they were Zoroastrians from Persia, right? That they were practicing this other religion that was there before Christianity, before Jesus. And that sort of this star watching stuff is apparently part of that. I'm no expert on Zoroastrians. There's still some Zoroastrians out there, but we don't, you know, they don't get a lot of press. Anyway, that jumped out to me in this story over the last couple of days, that these wise men from that place, of all places, would be the ones that come and recognize who Jesus is and what's going on. The unlikeliest of people, right? Following an entirely different religion from an entirely different culture and language, and yet they figure it out and they show up to see what God is doing. On Christmas Eve, I said that the amazing thing about these Bible stories, especially around the Christmas time, is that these happen, like, they refer to real places that still exist. And they're about people that we can sort of envision even in today in some way. You know, like there's a real connection. These aren't just fairy tales. I mean, I don't know, like I can't promise you that historically this old wise men thing happened just like it. I'm not saying that. But I'm saying that there's a realness to at least the geography of it. And there's a realness to the story of what these teach us about God and about how we understand God and who it is that shows us how to understand God. And so it stands out to me. So these wise men, these magi, these kings, you know, as the tradition goes, and it became three at some point, and then they got names, and there's a whole thing with that. But they came, as the story goes, and they found the baby Jesus. They followed this star, but before they got there, they did what kings might do, is they went to Jerusalem, they went to the actual king of the actual country, which is like a thing that existed. They went to Herod and said, hey, where's the king at? And Herod like tried to play it cool, right? He's like, oh, yeah, the king, well, I'll get right on top of that. And then he like, you know, sent them to their rooms or whatever, and he called everybody, what is this guy talking about? Herod's like, well, I'm the king, I got no king, I didn't just have a kid that's going to be the king, what are we talking about here? Come on now, what's happening? So he asked around and said, what's supposed to happen? The Messiah. Oh, the actual Messiah. And Herod probably thought, oh goodness, like I'm the king, I'm running stuff, this is going great for me. And all of a sudden, the Messiah is supposed to show up and take all my stuff? Forget that, Herod said. I want nothing to do with that. So he kept playing it cool, right? He kept playing it cool. He said, oh, come on. Oh guys, yeah, Bethlehem, it's right over there. Why don't you go check it out? Just go find the guy, search diligently for him, he says. And when you find him, let me know so I can come and give him presents too. Isn't that going to be great? Yeah. It'll be really fun. We'll throw a sweet party. The Messiah's here. It's all going to be great, right? And whether or not the wise men bought that, I feel like they would lose the title of wise men. It's like, oh, okay, Herod, what a cool guy. That's very plausible. Now, it says that in a dream it was told to them to go back and to not come back to Herod and to not tell him what had happened. But so they anyway, so they went and they brought these gifts, right? And what is gold and frankincense and myrrh. And I don't know a ton about frankincense and myrrh. Frankincense is like incense, it smells good, whatever. I don't know much about what that's for, except that it's fancy. And myrrh, I understand, was used in sort of preparing bodies for funerals, and that, as people say, that's an allusion to the death that Jesus would have later. That's how we think about myrrh. But again, I'm no expert on that either. But gold is pretty straightforward and has not really changed. One of the wonders of the world across history is that gold is still gold, still basically money, and people like it, right? And so I got to thinking, like, what do you suppose Mary and Joseph did with the gifts? You know, I mean, I don't know, myrrh and frankincense, I mean, I suppose you just hang on to them for a special occasion, or maybe you sell them for more, I don't know. It's not like Jesus the baby was going to do something. I mean, you can't, like, I've given gifts to kids, right? There's a certain age that they get to where, like, they care about that, but it's not then, right? I mean, like, my kid is almost 3. He cared about Christmas presents this year for the first time ever. Great, okay. So anyway, they didn't care about that. So I don't know what they did with the frankincense and the myrrh, but I have this idea about what Mary and Joseph may have done with the gold, right? Because I don't think they put it into like a 529 plan to save for Jesus' college, right? I don't think that's what happened. I don't think they deposited it at like the First Bank of Bethlehem to wire it to like Galilee Community Credit Union or whatever. Like, I don't think that's how it went, right? That's not what you do. That's not what you do. Even if you thought, oh, this gold, well, that could really come in handy. I want to save that for a rainy day. The thing is, most of you know what happens after this. The next thing that happens after today's lesson is done. So the Magi leave. They go home by another road because they heard what Herod is interested in. The next thing that happened is that Joseph is warned. Like, an angel of the Lord appears to Joseph and says, get out of here, go to Egypt, because Herod is mad, and he's going to try to kill your baby. And so they flee to Egypt. And I bet that gold came in real handy when they had to go to Egypt, you know, a different place, different language, different culture, different financial system probably. I mean, I know it was all part of the Roman Empire, so it's probably Roman coins, but each individual place had their own coinage system. But that gold was good everywhere, all right? That gold was good from, you know, China to Persia to Jerusalem to Egypt and beyond. So probably they lived off that gold during the months or years or however long they were refugees in Egypt. And in that case, that's a really powerful and important gift, and I think overlooked as we think about what this stuff was. I mean, when Jesus got to be an adult in this story, which happens pretty soon, they skip over the rest, it's not like he had all that gold in his pocket. You know, it's not like he had invested it wisely and had a nice little nest egg. That's not how that went. Jesus didn't even have a place to live. He just ran around doing stuff with his friends and talking to different people. So I think it's reasonable to assume that that gold was put to good use right away in Egypt when they needed it to survive, to keep this baby alive. So that brings us to, you know, what Herod did, and that's the next thing in the story, and you all know that part of the story. When Herod figured out what the wise men had done, that they had ditched him, that they'd abandoned him, and he was so mad, he flew into a rage, and he thought, well, now this Messiah might live, and he might usurp me one day, or my children. I don't know how this is going to work. And so, as the story goes, Herod decided to kill all the children, all the, I guess, boys, I guess, under 2 years old in that whole region. And so they call it, you know, the slaughter of the innocents, right? Matthew talks about it as fulfillment of a prophecy that says, you know, Rachel wept over her children, for they were no more. Honestly, I'm kind of thankful that there's no, like, corroborated historical record of that having happened. There's not like a different history book outside the Bible that says, oh yeah, I remember that time Herod killed all the kids. That's not, there's not quite that. But that doesn't mean it didn't happen. It doesn't, like, we don't know about that stuff. But the purpose of the story is very clear, is to say that Herod was so upset. He was so afraid. I mean, remember when the wise men first arrived, he was afraid What was he afraid of? He was afraid of losing his power. You know, here's Herod. He was this, you know, king of Israel, but he was still part of the Roman Empire, so he always had that over his shoulder. He always, like, he could never be the leader, the ruler he really wanted to be. He could never be totally in charge. And have you ever met somebody who really wanted to be in charge that couldn't quite be in charge? What are they like, right? You know exactly what they're like. They assert their power and their authority as much as possible, as often as possible, over as many people as they can. They're constantly trying to prove to other people and really to themselves that they're really the big boss man, right? It's usually a man, usually. And so that's what Herod was like. That's what he did. And the Romans weren't going to care or even probably notice if he did this thing. And so he went off and murdered a bunch of children. I guess Herod did like kill some of his actual like own children or grandchildren. I don't remember. That's historically put together. Like there was some of that kind of thing that happened. On the one hand, I wouldn't want to go too deep into it, but on the other hand, I wouldn't want to completely ignore the potential parallels to today's world yet again, where, you know, wannabe tyrants who aren't as powerful or popular as they like might do things like start a war to distract from their unpopularity. That's a thing that can and does happen. Even today. I mean, that's the thing about people who are powerful, right? They want, like I said, they want to keep it. You got what you got, and however you got it, however much your dad gave you, you think you earned it, and you want to keep it. You want to keep what you got, and sometimes you don't care who gets in the way. That's what Herod did. That's precisely the kind of world that Jesus broke into, that Jesus was born into, to change, right? I mean, that's part of the idea here, is the contrast between wicked King Herod and selfish and cruel and power-mad King Herod and this new King Jesus, who's a helpless baby who couldn't hurt it. Like, he can annoy you with his crying, maybe. Right? He could have a poopy diaper or something. You're like, oh, Jesus, come on. Right? Like, that's like the worst Jesus could do. Right? I mean, it's meant to be that kind of contrast, that God comes into the world in a completely different way and completely upends what we think power looks like, what we think it means to be a king or a ruler. I mean, that's the whole idea here. That's why Jesus wasn't born in Jerusalem in the halls of power. Jesus was born in this nowhere village, in a place where it didn't even have a proper place to lay down. I mean, that's what God is trying to show us. And then these wise men, right, these Zoroastrian magi, or whoever they were, right, these are people who are not supposed to get it. They don't worship the God of Israel. They don't know about that. And yet they come from hundreds, thousands of miles away, this long, arduous, dangerous journey, just to see what God is doing. Just to let these people know, hey, y'all might have missed it, but there's something big happening here. Something big. Things are about to change. And it's enough that they came all this way and they brought these gifts and they thought, this is going to affect us. This is going to affect our lives, even way over here. How? When? Somehow they knew that God was doing a new thing, a different thing, a powerful thing. Even they who were so unexpected, who had no reason to know based on the, you know, the rules, based on how things were supposed to work. And today I think, you know, it's the same. God is doing a new thing, even if we don't see it. I mean, that's one of the things that I've believed, one of the sort of cornerstones of my faith as a Christian over the last 20 or so years that I've been doing this kind of thing, is this belief that God is doing something new, that God is still active, that God is still changing the world, that God is still undercutting those who would hurt others for their own gain and their own power, right? That God is still doing these things. But it can be hard to see. It can be hard for us to recognize. Those of us who have been doing this for a while, we kind of get used to the patterns, we get used to the stories, and we get used to the lifestyle. of following Jesus, and we forget the wonder and awe and majesty and fear that can come with this, and the change that can come with this. The good news of this story to me is first that God is still doing these things, that God is still breaking into our world. And secondly, the good news is that even if we don't see it, that somebody does, and that we can go looking for it. We can find those who can show us what God is doing. And it may be unexpected people from unexpected places. That's, to me, the good news. We may need to ask somebody. Even we who've been in church for all this time, we may need to go out and ask somebody, what is God doing? Where is this happening? How can I see how God has been born again in this world to change everything for the better? That's going to be my plan for it's the first of the year, you know, and that matters to me. So I think my plan for the year is going to be partly based on this. I mean, we've got Matthew's gospel all year. This fits in real well, right? Where are we going to find the people who know what God is doing? Who are we going to ask? I mean, I'm supposed to be starting a new church, right? The only way that happens is if I go out and ask a bunch of dumb questions of a bunch of random people. And some are not random, and some are targeted, and some are not dumb questions, some are good questions. But the bottom line is, we got to get out there and start asking questions and start looking for God doing this new thing. Because God is already doing it. I just haven't found it yet. And partly because I'm afraid of what I'm going to find, because it's going to change me. It's going to change how I have to do things, right? I don't want that. I'm pretty comfy. I don't want to have to change me and my whole deal. I don't want to have to change this and what we're doing here. But it looks like that's how it's going to be. The change is coming whether we want it or not. And the question is whether we're going to go out and find what God is doing and be a part of that change, or whether we're just going to let it happen to us. And I'm speaking mostly to myself, although I think it applies to you all too. But that too is good news, because God is doing this thing, and we can find it. It can be revealed to us. And the gifts of God can do things in this community just as they did for the family of Jesus all those years ago. Amen.